Honorable members of the committee, Deputy Minister Dr. Majake, the Deputy Chairperson of the PSC, officials from the Department of Public Service Administration and the entities, you are welcome this morning to the Portfolio Committee meeting of Public Service and Administration Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation. The meeting is officially open. Let's move to apologies. I have the two apologies here. The minister apology for inability of the Honorable Minister Ayanda Dlodlo to attend the National Assembly plenary 6-7-8 November. On behalf of the minister, I hereby wish to tender an apology for inability of the minister to attend the above mentioned plenary. The minister is out of office due to study leave. Kindly please convey sincere apologies of the minister to the speaker. Kind regards, Emmanuel Marshall. Another apology, the apology of the chairperson of the Public Service Commission. I acknowledge the receipt of the above letter in regard to the briefing of the second quarter performance of PSC. Given the fact that there are various engagements taking place in Parliament, the PSC has spread attendance of Parliament engagements amongst commissioners. I will therefore be unable to attend the meeting. The Deputy Chairperson of the Commission, Mr. Bim Mtembu, will attend. He will be supported by Ms. Irene Matenjo, Acting DG. And then Muruti Mwepu. That's a pombele, yours, ma. Oh, he writes like a doctor. I will leave at half past 10 for medical checkup. Okay. Any other apology? No other apology. Thanks. Let's move to the briefing by the Public Service Commission on the second quarter's performance 2018-2019 financial year. Deputy Chairperson, Mr. Mtembu, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, and as well as members of the Portfolio Committee on Public Service and Administration, Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation. We appreciate the invitation to present to you our second quarter annual performance. To that effect, I will therefore request the Acting DG, Ms. Matenjwa, to make a presentation, and then we will be ready to engage on any issues which may arise thereof. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, Deputy Minister and colleagues. My name is Irene Matenjwa, and I'm here on behalf of DG Mampiswana, the DG of the Public Service Commission, and as the Deputy Chairperson has indicated, I'll be taking you through the presentation on the performance of the Public Service Commission second quarter report. So if we move straight into slide two of the presentation, which has been circulated, I believe, will take you through the summary of the second quarter report for this financial year. We'll also talk about the expenditure at the end of the quarter, September. We'll look at performance per program, and we'll just also give you some feedback in terms of how we're implementing our audit action plan, as well as issues relating to irregular, fruitless, wasteful expenditures through the quarter. As we move to slide 3 of the presentation, the PSC has a total of 19 APP targets for this financial year, 8 of which are quarterly targets and 11 are annual targets. Of the 8 quarterly targets for this quarter ending September, 7 of them were due, and we are pleased to inform the committee that all of those targets have been achieved. So we're sitting at 100% achievement of our quarterly targets as of September 2018. And also, as I go through the presentation, we'll also demonstrate the positive trajectory towards achieving all our annual targets for the year. We can move on now to slide number 4, that is feedback in terms of expenditure against the budget for the period under review. Our budget is 264 million. Our expenditure is at the end of the quarter, it was 119, and our current available budget is 145, which means we have spent 45% with the variance of underspending at 4.98%. Perhaps if I can just take a minute or two and explain what that means in terms of our under expenditure, that 4.98 actually translates to an amount of 13 million, and that 13 million was as a result of a couple of line items that I will take you through, with the first one being compensation. Of that, there were two issues. We have got COLA, which was for commissioners. At the time, at the 30 September, we couldn't pay that. It was to the amount of about 600,000, but as we're speaking today, that has been paid off as we were waiting for direction from the president, since commissioners are appointed through that process. So we couldn't pay up until we had to wait for a direction from the president. Secondly, again, part of that was the vacancies. We have got quite huge movement, particularly at lower levels officials. Others are moving to other departments and so on. So this is not an indication of a high vacancy rate. It just means that you have got an official that gets transferred to another department, and then within a couple of months, then we have got that vacancy. That then contributes to this situation. Secondly, we have got goods and services. As the committee would be aware, that the Public Service Commission moved from one building to the other, which is also in Pretoria, the national office in particular, in July 2018. We have been struggling, and we are working very hard on this with Department of Public Works and National Treasury. We have not been, we have not received our invoices for rental, utilities, as well as bill of quantity. So that huge amount, actually, which is 11 million, is the one that is contributing to this area of underspending. As I said, we are appraising National Treasury on a regular basis, and this is on record. We have engaged the Minister of Public Works and so on, but they are working with the landlords so that we can have these matters resolved. We have also transfers and subsidies. Very quickly, there is overspending of 179 due to resignations of officials and to a certain extent retirements. And we also had an issue regarding payment of capital assets, and this was due to the IT and security infrastructure that we had to procure when we moved from the old office to the new office, so that it was also compatible with the new environment. So largely, those are the issues. As I said earlier on, we are engaged in National Treasury, and we are hoping that when we come for the third quarter report, some of these issues would have been addressed. So as we move on again, at slide number 5, I'm not going to spend too much time. That's what I was trying to explain just now. We can move to slide number 6. When you look at slide number 6, the issues that have been alluded to, largely they sit under administration, which is our program 1. So if you look at program 2, leadership and management practices, monitoring and evaluation, integrity and anti-corruption, on slide number 6, you would see that the expenditure is really within the norm, and that is our core business at the Public Service Commission. then we can get to performance in as far as the various branches or programs are concerned. The first one being administration. In this area of work, we have got a total of six targets, four of which were due in quarter two, and all of them they were achieved. So you can see there at slide number 8, that specifically were those targets that were achieved relating to the audit opinion, payment of invoices, risk management, as well as interim financial statements submitted to the National Treasury. We can move on to slide number 9, where we are reporting on the second branch, which is the leadership and management practices. Within this branch, we've got a total of 5 targets. 3 are annual as well as 2 are quarterly, and those quarterly reports were due in this quarter, and we are also pleased to indicate that they were all achieved. And just to mention again, the Public Service Commission does engage also on a number of activities outside of the APP as and when it realizes that there is a need for certain things that have to be given attention. During this quarter, under that particular branch, we hosted a roundtable on professionalization of the public service in September. But specifically to the APP targets, on slide number 10, those are the annual targets, as you can see. But we are also demonstrating that there is work being done towards achieving our annual target. And as we move on to slide number 11, the two targets specifically that were due in this quarter is the number of reports on management of grievances in the public service produced, that was produced in the technical brief was produced as a report in September, the second one being communique on grievance management produced, that was also produced in during the month of September. So those two targets were achieved. The other ones, the last item on slide number 11 as well as slide number 12 are those targets that due in the outer quarters, but also we give a sense of comfort to the portfolio committee that work is being done, and we anticipate at this point in time that we will achieve those targets. We move on to the next branch, which is monitoring and evaluation, which is program 3. We don't have a specific target that is due for this quarter. We are also demonstrating that work has been done towards achieving our third and fourth quarter target as well. And as we move on to slide number 14, this is a branch we call Integrity and Anti-Corruption. This branch has got a total of 7 targets, 6 are annual targets and 1 is quarter target, and that single quarter target is due in this month and also has been achieved. And as I said earlier on, there are a couple of things that we get engaged during the year as and when the public service deems it necessary. Just take you back into slide 13. Apologies. Within the branch monitoring and evaluation, we conducted 1 national and 8 provincial launches around the constitutional values and principles, which was Public Service Month. And this is one of the key issues really in the Public Service Commission, or rather this is the bedrock of the work of the Public Service Commission. So we did that under the branch monitoring and evaluation. But under the branch integrity and anti-corruption, slide number 14, some of the things that we have been engaged with outside of the quarter, the first one being the management of conflict of interest through the financial disclosures. We're sitting at a submission rate of 95%. I see that, I know that there is saying 99.6. I just need to make a correction. It's 95%, which means at provincial is 98% of submission of disclosures. At national is 93% disclosures. Already the Public Service Commission has commenced with the scrutiny of those financial disclosures. Similarly, again, we do receive requests from departments on certain areas of agencies that the Public Service Commission has to respond, and we are working on about 800 investigations from the Department of Public Works that the Minister requested that we assist in terms of the appointments of officials in that department. So that's some of the things that really keep us busy outside of the APP. But going back again to the work that we have committed in the APP on this branch, as I said, there is only one target that is due. On slide 16, we're just demonstrating progress again towards achieving the outer targets. But on slide 17, Specifically, that single target that is due on quarter two is the percentage of NAH cases referred within 7 days. Our target was 85%. We're sitting at 99% of those cases that are referred within 7 days. Honorable members, and then we will move to the next part of our presentation, which is the audit implementation of the audit action plan. We are on course in terms of really monitoring the implementation of our audit action plans. We don't have an area that is not being addressed. I'm not going to go through the details. It's quite a long list of issues, but just to indicate that we are on course towards implementing our audit action plan. And for this quarter again, if we move on to slide number 20, we have not incurred any irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure. That brings us to the end of the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mtembu and Ms. Matejo. That's the presentation. Deputy Minister, any comment?
Thank you, Chairperson. Members and officials of the department and members of the public. This is the report that we are actually presenting from the Public Service Commission. Quite evidently, the entity is actually doing well with unqualified reports. And when you look at slide number 14 on administration, it is not 14.8. That's where you can actually see that we have unqualified audits, and the fact that what is mainly most of the time contentious in terms of payment of service providers within 30 days, the performance is 100%. Also monitoring of the risk management report is what is actually quite evident and much appreciated, and the fact that they are in the position to provide interim financial statements timelessly to Treasury. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. Honourable members, and questions and comments. Honorable Kasim, Honorable Mtao. Welcome, Kasim.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thanks for the presentation, PSC. Chairperson, today I don't have a question, but really to indicate that with the presentation that we received today, for me is to say thank you very much to PSC. At times when something are not going very well, you know how do we comment dealing with you as an entity. But today, let me say this to you that you need to take us positively, because when there is good work that is happening, we will applaud you. And in these few ways, I wanted to say that we appreciate the good work that you have done, and positively, so that it's how we're going to behave to all entities in this department. If things are not going well, we will say something to correct those things that are not going well. But now, for now, why must I ask a question if really everything that I've received is just in order? Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Kosma, Honorable Mtao. Then Honorable Naifo.
Thank you very much. Just a quick one to the... On slide number 9, leadership and management, I'm interested in the round table that you had. I think it's a good thing on professionalization of the public service. Is there anything that jumped out at you guys, something that you learned that we need to do better so that we can actually have ongoing professionalization of the service. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Mtau. Honorable Nivot.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you to the PSC for your presentation. If we go to slide 17, I just have a question for clarity. The NACH, the hotline, cases that are referred, I see within 7 days, referred 99%. That's referred, so it doesn't mean that it's been resolved. And then at the bottom I see finalized within 45 days, 88%. I just wanted clarity, that is it 88% of the 99% that was referred, that was resolved? So I just needed clarity. My real question is, how many cases that gets referred is resolved, that you see to that is referred gets resolved, how many of that percentage?
Those are the comments and the questions, Commissioner and the Acting DG.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, thanks very much for the positive remarks which you have said. And I think that is encouraging. We appreciate that very much. I just want to attempt to respond to the question raised by Honorable Mtau, pardon me, around the professionalization of the public service round table. I think one of the key objectives of that round table was the fact that when you look at the National Development Plan, one of the key strategic objectives, if we are to improve the performance of the public service generally, was that we need to professionalize it so that it becomes professional. But then now there's a question as to what exactly do we mean by professionalization. Now, professionalization is a highly contested concept. You will also be aware that there are unions, in fact, who others will regard them as professionals, but the members thereof regard themselves as workers. So what exactly do we mean? And some of these unions are, in fact, working in the public sector. So now, one of the key objectives, what is a common understanding of professionalization of the public service? We have had some professors from the university. We have had the deputy minister was there, also made an input. And then we have also had Professor Levine making an input, among others, to really help us to understand what is it. So most of them agree that this is highly contested and there are various definitions. But what is imagined? What are the key features among all these definitions? And the following is what emerged, is that professionalization essentially refers to the fact that now recruitment and appointment of people in the public service should be based on nothing else but on merit. In other words, we must move away towards a creation of the public service that is based on meritocracy, not on the basis of political connection, not on the basis of other criteria that have got nothing to do with the requirements that are inherent in what a person is supposed to be done. So that is one common understanding that emerged. That does not necessarily mean, of course, the people who will say, of course, but what about what you call deployment? And then political deployment, you know, is inconsistent with meritocracy. And then what also emerged was that what does it mean by a cadre?
And some people have argued that Nakeda simply means someone who's having, who has been trained and having a particular skills, etc. If you look at the concept itself. However, the question that must arise is whether that person has actually been appointed on the basis of the necessary requirements, the necessary skills, competencies, and then as well as, of course, that now when he does his work, is actually based on a code of conduct of that particular work. So I think to respond to your question is the fact that now we've got a better understanding of professionalization. Now, secondly, we also look at what targets were set by the NDP. Now, if you look at the NDP, they've set 5 targets towards the realization of a professionalized public service. I won't go into details among those targets, but among them was the fact that now the NDP speaks of that now the public service must be headed by what we call head of the public service, head of the public service who is professional. Now, the head of the public service who actually look into the career incidences of heads of departments, all of them. Because in that manner, it means now we'll be detaching political accountability and administrative accountability. Political accountability will be the EA, the political head. But for professional matters, career instances like assessment, blah, 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 and all other those things that are purely administrative should be done by a professional aid. So that target has not yet been achieved. And the PSC currently, I've been asked or tasked to engage the relevant department to see to what extent. So what is undergoing there? Because that is one step. Another issue that has been achieved regarding professionalization in terms of the NDP target was the question of delegations. Now, if you look at the current Public Service Act, powers for appointment, in fact, many HR functions are given by the responsibility of the political head, the EA. More often than not, you'll find that now, in the past, in certain instances, you know, the EA, the political head, will even approve appointment of cleaners, you know, all those other things, etc., etc. And then more often than not, there were no delegations to the HOD or head of department, the chief director or DDG. Now, that is beginning to change with the amendment of the Public Service Regulations of 2016, which state it specifically, and it makes it obligatory for the EA to delegate. And if you look, in fact, that delegation, there was a time frame. Now, if you look at the delegations of appointments, you know, having referred to the head of department, now the DG. So the DG. And then we expect that the DG will also delegate to the chief director, and it goes on up to probable the chief director. So that now methods of appointments, etc., etc., are now in the hands of the lower levels. Now, another target which is still outstanding in terms of the NDP was that now the appointment of the head of department, the NDP has proposed a hybrid approach. In other words, it says that now we don't want to go to an extreme where we assume that now if the political head, you know, does not appoint automatically, it means that now the DG or any other people won't be biased or objective. Mm-hmm. Or we move to another extreme level where we say the political head knows everything. So a hybrid approach tries to strike a balance whereby we say that now for the appointment of the head of department, we would have the chairperson of the Public Service Commission together with another, or the head of the public service, etc. They will advertise, you know, call for everybody, and then now with a clear, transparent process, criteria, etc., and after that, then they will they will then submit three names based on the interviews, which are sent to the political aid, the executive authority, who will then now appoint among these. I think it's a model which the current president has followed. You know, if you look at what for the head of what NPA, they follow that model. Just call people there, and then at the end they'll come with three names, and they go away. That's a hybrid approach to avoid that, to say no, it's a political appointment. At the same time, you're based on political connections. So that is a model which is suggested by the National Development Plan. That has not as yet been achieved. So in short, though we have been able to identify what is professionalization, the key features, and then secondly, we're able to assess the extent to which we are moving forward towards the realization of the idea of a public service which is strictly meritocratic.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and thank you, Honorable Member. On the slide 17, I may not necessarily have the final details, but what I need to explain is that if you look at the first part, which is the percentage of the NAH cases referred within 7 days, so through the National Anti-Corruption Hotline, we receive cases or complaints that may be related to fraud, may be related to alleged corruption that's taking place in the public service or even in the public sector. So what we do in those cases, as and when we receive them, we try and collate as much information as possible from the complainant, and we make an assessment, and thereafter, within a period of 7 days, when we have got all the information, we refer to those relevant institutions. Large of them, obviously, they relate to SASSA, which is an entity, but also to departments. As I said earlier on, it could be issues of fraud, it could be issues of supply chain, where there was some rigging and so on. So we refer them to those departments so that they can do investigations and give us feedback on those cases and explain what remedial action they will be taking so that we can engage with the complainant and then give them feedback. But as Public Service Commission, we still have a responsibility to assess the kind of feedback that we receive and whether it's satisfactory to go back to the complainant. And where we are not happy, we'll raise the issue with the EA to say that we are not happy in the manner in which this matter was handled and would make a recommendation. Now, the difference between that first indicator and the last one is that we also have service delivery complaints that we investigate ourselves. These are done by the officials at the Public Service Commission, and this largely refers to personnel practices, which we call investigations that are conducted through early resolution within 45 days. So that case, as soon as it gets to us and we obtain all the information that is required, because it has to do with the personnel practices, be it appointment or irregular appointment in the department or other issues that relating to personnel practices, we investigate those cases and we make sure that they are finalized within a period of 45 days. I'm not sure whether that is helpful.
Thank you. Deputy Minister.
Just to endorse the comments that have actually been made by the Public Service Commission on professionalization, and to indicate that indeed this is what would actually help us to run efficient and effective public service that provides quality service to all South Africans, that actually also manages, when you look at the issue of appointments, manage to appoint people who are qualified, who have skills, who got ability, in order for us to be in the position to give services to South Africans, or maybe provide jobs in a fair manner. What has actually been emphasized was just about cadre deployment, but also within the department itself, what gets challenging is when you don't look at how officials themselves handle an area of this nature in terms of appointments, whether the appointments are the kind of appointments that are made by officials, whether it's not a situation where you find that you will give your own friend a job, a friend that does not qualify. And, you know, sometimes we need to look at these things in a balanced manner, because half the time we focus on politicians as if the only wrong area would be when it has to do with politicians, when in actual fact, also on the side of officials, there's got to be accountability, and I think it's something that we need to look at. In terms of also delegation of authority, I think we need to actually couple that with accountability measures. But all in all, we are quite happy with the work that we are doing with the Public Service Commission, and especially when it comes to the area of disclosures, because I think you have actually managed to achieve something like almost 99% or 96% achievement, which is actually good, because the whole issue of non-disclosures actually hinders on officials or government employees doing business with government, which becomes problematic. And there's an area that we are actually beginning to look at, because you know, in certain cases you'd find that we have beautiful policies like supply chain management policy that actually gets manipulated when it comes to the supplier database that makes government to actually pay too much money unnecessarily. You find that those who have actually managed to make it to be on the supplier database then start overcharging government, and it's an area that needs to be looked at carefully. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. Honorable Ntombe.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thanks for the report. Chairperson, I've got an understanding here. Maybe it's subject to correction. You are only professional to an extent that you are carrying out a particular task within the existing political dispensation. Now, your professionalism should then be linked to the political mandate. Your professionalism should also be have got to do also with the patriotism, carrying out the objectives of a particular political dispensation. I am saying that, Chairperson, because this CADA deployment issue is given negative connotations, or the way we deal with it, it's like it's got a negativity of some sort. And I've got a problem with that, because in most of the time, when government changes, when one government is replaced by the other, usually the norm is that you get people that are loyal to you. You get people that are loyal to a particular party. So So maybe, Chairperson, we need to look at it on some other day. But I personally don't think that professionalism in the administration has got to be loyal to a particular cause or political cause. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Ntombela. I think government has got checks and balance when you have to appoint public officials. Parliament does appoint commissioners and whole range of public officials. The Constitution, the Public Service Act, makes provision for appointment by executive authorities, starting with the president, ministers, MECs, and as you say, politicians delegate powers to accounting officers. And in all these processes, in my experience in the public administration, there are checks and balance. A minister, before he or she appoints staff in his or her office, must submit the names with the
all the requirements, security vetting and qualifications to the Minister of Public Service and Administration. I don't know of a minister who appointed staff in his office without going through that process. So the list goes on and on and on and on. So there's no instance where you do things as you wish in government. There is nothing like that. If somebody transgresses, that person must be punished because he or she will not have followed the rules as stipulated. So we should not talk in general terms. Government is a science in how you run it, starting with the constitution, the relevant legislation, the regulations. In the olden days, we used to have what we call staff code. I'm not sure Deputy Minister is still there, derived from the then Public Service Act. So all these things are there, unless we are not exposed to public administration. We'll talk in general terms, but if you have got exposure, you will know what we are talking about. So thanks very much, Public Service Commission, and also echo the words of those who are commending the 100% achievement of the target. We can't face the other direction when an institution achieves 100% and keep quiet. But if it achieves 20%, we tell them to go somewhere else. So it's commendable, the good work that you have done. Thanks very much. Let's move to the next briefing by the National School of Government on the second quarter's performance of 2018-2019 financial year. Is there any comment, Minister, before Maja takes the platform?
Thank you, Chairperson. Like the Public Service Commission has presented, now we're going to be presenting the report from the National School of Government that will actually be presented by Mr. Maja, and we will then later engage on the report. I thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Maja. The platform is yours.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and Deputy Minister. Thank you, and Honorable Members. We are here to present the Quarter 2 report of the National School of Government, and we will touch on those five areas that are on slide 2. The first area that we would like to share with the committee is on slide number 3. The intention with that slide is to just give the committee a head-up highlights of performance for this quarter 2. In that slide, Chairperson, we would like to alert the committee to the following 3 points. Firstly, that we have achieved 87% of our training targets for the quarter. The reason that we are communicating 87% is mainly due to we've started to introduce strict cut-off of training numbers. You will recall, Chairperson, that one of the audit findings in the last financial year related to misstatement of financials, and that was caused partly due to late capturing of our training numbers. So we have begun to communicate the message for this financial year that we will need to be stricter with how we capture the training numbers so that we're not found wanting at the end of the financial year. So we've introduced that for this quarter, and we'll continue with that measure in quarter 3, such that by the end of the financial year we will be on par with timely reporting on our training targets. But when you then take away the cut-off measure that we've introduced, we will notice that, in fact, we've achieved 99.7% of our training targets for quarter 2.
The second message, Chairperson, that would like to share with the committee relates to revenue generation. As the committee is aware, under our training trading account, we are required to raise revenue. Our target for this quarter was to raise 59 million rands. We've been able to raise in this quarter so far 53 million rands of the 59 million that we had targeted to have raised by now. The last message, Chairperson and committee members, in terms of highlighting our performance, our APP targets across both the vote and the trade, we have been able to achieve 91% of our targets by quarter two. If I may then move on to slide number five, to share with the committee our quarter two performance, looking specifically now at program one. You will see that in program one we had 8 performance targets. We've achieved 6, and one of them did not have an activity plan for this quarter, and only one activity was not achieved. The detail is provided in that slide number 5. I think what is important, Chairperson, to highlight is that in terms of the management improvement plan from the last financial year, we've now been able to implement 86% of that management improvement plan, including the intervention that I've just mentioned on the training numbers. The other finding that we had from the last financial year related to the security contract, and that matter has also now been resolved. So we are quite comfortable that the suppliers that we are having have been paid within the 30-day period, and we continue to reduce debt collection, and the vacancy rate for the organization remains at 10%. In slide number 6, I provide the specific numbers in terms of the revenue targets, the 59.7 million that we had hoped to raise and the 53.5 million that we've been able to raise so far. Moving on, Chairperson, to slide number 8 to share with the committee our performance in terms of program 2. We had 16 performance targets in program 2. We've been able to achieve 15 of those. The one target that is not achieved is the one that I explained in relation to the training numbers and the cutoff, but we're still sitting in terms of achievement on that and at 99.7%. That is the target that we've not been able to achieve. We then indicate to the committee the various highlights in terms of program 2 performance. We've been able to conduct 14 training needs analyses. We've conducted 4 research colloquia. We've done 22 application of learning studies. The draft 6 curriculum programs that we were struggling with in quarter one, as we reported last time to the committee, we've now been able to develop those draft 6 program strategies, and we also have approval already for the local government leadership development program by the LGCETA that we worked on. The executive induction program is rolling out, and the coaching sessions, which is also an outcome 12 deliverable, have begun, and 80% of the learners have at least completed one session of coaching. These are DGs and DDGs that have been appointed into the public service. Slide number 9, Chairperson, is the training numbers that we mentioned, which are still being able to achieve, to be achieved at 99.7%, as I earlier indicated. When we move to slide number 10, we provide the committee with a breakdown of training delivery per the various streams, leadership, management, administration, unemployed youth, and the induction. And you will see when you look at the numbers, Chairperson, that the quarter two targets have been exceeded by the leadership stream. The management stream is fairly on par. The administration stream is slightly behind. We have exceeded our targets in terms of the unemployed youth graduates with the breaking barriers to entry intervention that we've made. And we're also slightly behind with the induction interventions. In those two areas where we are still behind, we are confident that we should be able to recover by quarter three and quarter four, and we should be on track by the end of the financial year to achieve our objectives. Looking at the financials, Chairperson, we will share with the committee both the vote and the trade. The vote account is on slide number 12. And what we would like to share with the committee is that in terms of our pro rata budget thus far up to quarter two, it is 84 million and we've been able to spend 73.5 million of that. That gives us an 88% budget expenditure in terms of our target for the quarter. The one area that's lagging behind is on goods and services and also capital payments, payments for capital assets, which we hope to recover on both of those areas in quarter three and quarter four. The trading account is on slide number 17. In relation to the trading account, we've been able to spend 97% of our budget. Our budget pro rata was 98.1 million. And we've been able to spend 95.3 million of that. Chairperson, the last slide that we would like to share with the committee is slide number 15, which deals with the human resource issues. As I indicated earlier, our vacancy rate is currently standing at 10%, which is on target. We have about 23 vacancies in the organization. We also share the breakdown with the committee of the vacancy rate per operational category. We also share with the committee the employment, equity, gender, disability and youth profile of the organization. To note there is that our employment in terms with the people with disabilities continues to exceed the target. And we also share with the committee our employment equity race profiles just to provide the committee with the breakdown of our employees in terms of race. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Mr. Amosha. Members, questions and comments? Deputy Minister, if you can switch off the mic. Honourable Mutau.
Thank you, Church. Just a quick one on your performance targets and not achieve program one. I'm impressed with the revenue you generated for training. Just give us a sense, because my sense is that it's much better than it has ever been, unless I'm wrong. So what are you doing that's right? And I see, obviously, there is still more that could have come if the departments had actually informed you guys. Can you just put that in perspective for me? But I think this is much, much better than we've had. Yeah.
That's the only question. Can you share with us the motive that you used to get people to pay so much amount of money?
Thank you, Chairperson. The muti comes from Limpopo. it has allowed us to do a few things. The first thing that we've introduced, Honorable Ndau, through you, Chairperson, is prepayment. And we've been encouraging departments to prepay. It's beginning to bear fruit. More and more departments are able to pay us in advance. The area that we are beginning to deal with in relation to prepayment is that to commit to the training once they're paid so that they show up for training. That's the one challenge that we're still managing at the moment. The second intervention that we've been putting in place and we will improve on it as we move forward is to introduce a calendar which allows us to communicate in advance to departments as to which courses will be ready and available by what date so that they can pre-register in advance, well ahead of time, and plan ahead of time which courses they would like to attend. And we hope that that will not only help us with the revenue generation interventions, but also with the training numbers, because we've also seen a bit of an improvement with regards to the training numbers. And also, we're seeing more and more departments beginning to engage more meaningfully with us. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, and commend the good work that you are doing. This is the very same school that used to call something, or is this something else? Okay. I come from Tuka Sedaya Af, so I thought this is another school. Yeah, I don't know, thanks, because it used to be another institution. institution which is not at the level where it is. So I think the work you are doing is commendable. Thanks very much. The next briefing is the Center for Public Service Innovation. It's Ms. Dego. Did I pronounce it correctly? Okay. Thanks. The stage is yours.
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members. I'm going to be presenting the second quarter report for the Center for Public Service Innovation. I'm quickly going to run through to the fifth slide, which shows the performance of the organization. CPSI had seven targets, six of which were achieved and one was not achieved. Just to indicate that we've put in place mechanisms to make sure that the target that was not achieved is achieved within the third quarter so that we continue to be on track with our annual performance plan. Just to run through some of the targets, the first two relate to the branch administration, and it's really about compliance. So we have complied 100% to financial statement submissions and non-financial reports to DPME and the minister as well. We've also put together an implementation report for internal and external audits, which we'll be implementing throughout the year. Then on program two, research and development, the task for this quarter was to consult on innovative solutions that we are going to implement next year. We have begun the consultations and identified challenges. We hosted a national hackathon in September as part of the Public Service Month, where we have outlined some of the challenges or solutions we would like to deal with. And they relate to service delivery and complaints management. They relate to health and record management in the health sector. We've had a couple of good solutions from the young people, which we are looking to incubate in the next financial year and then try to replicate in the public service. Then in terms of capacitating public sector employees in terms of innovation, this is a quarterly target, which in the first quarter we over-exceeded. And although in the second quarter we underachieved, but because it's a cumulative target, we've been able to meet our target for the second quarter. And this relates to public sector officials who visit our facility and who are taken through our support program for innovation. The other achievement is around the hosting of platforms to promote innovation and demonstrate and unearth innovation. We did host the annual conference under the theme Partnering for an Agile and Renewed Public Sector through Innovation in August here in Cape Town, and that event was a success. And then in terms of the targets that I have alluded to, which was not achieved, it relates to our publication ideas that work. We are supposed to publish two editions in a year. As I indicated, we will be publishing the edition in the third quarter. And then the last target pertains to hosting of international innovation, or participation rather, in international innovation programs. We did a CPSI co-host the SADC UNPAN workshop, which was held in Mauritius in June 2018. Then in terms of HR oversight, we do have 38 posts, three of which are vacant. It's the post of the ED, Executive Director, and two posts, which is the post of Deputy Director in Research, which we are currently filling, as well as the post of Deputy Director Strategic Management, which we will be completing filling shortly. Employment equity, CPSI is at 67% in terms of women, and is at 5.8% in terms of persons with disability. Chairperson, if I can just quickly go through the financial statements. In terms of the budget which we have received from DPSA, it's 9.7, which 8.2 of which we have spent. The underspending really relates to the executive director who for some time was seconded to the DPSA, and as a result there was no expenditure, or rather we recovered the monies from DPSA for the compensation of the executive director. The same applies in terms of some of the planned trips that would have been paid for the executive director. That money was not used. And then also in terms of the lease payments, we are anticipating to pay for the water and lights in the third quarter, and that's what has caused the under expenditure. Then in terms of program two, which is public sector innovation, we have experienced a bit of underspending, which relates to lesser spending or lower spending in venues and facilities. This is part of our cost containment, but we anticipate that because we have just hosted the awards, there will be a bit of a hike in the spending in terms of that as well. I'll just quickly skip this because I think I've spoken to the important part of the finances. In terms of the 30-day payments, CPSI has processed 206 payments, and none of them have exceeded the 30 days. We continue to be at an average of 5 days for payments, which is a record that we are very proud of. This is the end of the presentation, Chairperson, and thank you.
Thank you. The Deputy Minister is not here. Okay. Honourable Nivot, Honourable Kosa.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. I lost the slide now, but it relates to donor funds. You said the end of March 2019. How many of the staff is funded from that donor funds? So March is in, you know, 4 months' time. What efforts are being made to keep those staff members? Can they reapply for, or can you reapply for the donor funding, or is there another way to try and keep the staff that are funded by that? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Kosa.
Thank you very much.
Deputy Minister, you will make comments
for the presentation. Chairperson, even though there is one red here also, I also want to commend this presentation. Is a good presentation, but to further request that the pace with regard to the issue of people living with disabilities, we request that the pace at which you moved with regard to women on SMS, you need to double your efforts when it comes to people living with disabilities, that in future we need not be reporting, but we'll be able to be seeing that as you are reporting, the people living with disabilities are with us in this house. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you. Those are the comments. Allow you then the Deputy Minister.
Thank you, Chairperson. In terms of the posts that are funded by donor funding, it's quite true. March 2019 is upon us, and it is a matter of great concern
for us, attempts have been made to secure additional donor funding. At this stage, we have not been successful to do that. We are trying to make plans to see where we can save cost and use that money to fund some of these posts. This is an option that we are trying to explore. Really, we are hoping that we are going to finalize those plans as soon as possible. It's very critical posts for the work of the CPSI, so we are doing everything in our power to make sure that we can secure some additional funding to retain those people in those posts. The comment on persons with disabilities is noted. I think Lindani will make sure that we bring one of the editor of our journal Ideas at Work happens to be blind, and he's very good at what he does. It would be a good experience for him as well to come here at some point. So we will explore that. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honourable Nevot, they say there's a very capable blind person who's an editor. I hope you are happy about that. Sure. Deputy Minister.
Thank you, Chairperson. And just to say that we do appreciate the progress that has actually been made by the Center for Public Service Innovation. They're doing a very good job, which is actually helping to also modernize public service, which is what is one of our goals, to be in the position to come up with a public service that is solution-oriented, that actually manages to provide services that are quality services to South Africans, that provides an opportunity for public servants themselves, where there are challenges for them to come up with innovative ideas that can actually help to solve the problems of the people of this country. It's a very small unit within public service and administration, but what the situation we're envisaging is to almost, in future, mainstream this CPSI. It needs to become a bigger office if we are serious about coming up with a public service that is efficient and effective, that manages to realize particular principles. We need to mainstream it like we did in the past with issues of gender, establishing in each government department a gender focal point, maybe to some extent as we move forward. This is what we could look at, to have a desk within every government department that actually does a CPSI work. And when it comes to donor funding, one thing that is worrying about donor funding is just the fact that some of the conditions don't really get properly aligned to our own APPs. You take the money, but you find that the money does very little in terms of your programs. What you're trying to avoid is to find that we have to actually have additional plans that are just based on donor funding. The example would be the funding that has actually been given to the National School of Government. It's a lot of money that has been given, but what they actually themselves have access to in terms of using the money is only 30%, and the 70% is actually run by the donors. And these are some of the things that ourselves as a country need to start looking at, and maybe negotiate when we enter into bilaterals, in order for donor funding to manage to actually bring about development of the people of this country. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Deputy Minister and CPSI, for the good work that they are doing. The people that are going to be shared from March next year, 38, I think there's money that comes from donor funding that is also used for funding, paying for 38 staff members. So there must be anxiety by now that March is around the corner. that they are going to lose jobs. And in the era in which we are, where there are no prospects for jobs outside there, really, we can't dictate to you, we are parliament, it's your executive function. If something can be done to look at this matter, it's a very painful experience that I think these people are going through. As I say, it's not a matter that will want a response here and put you under a pressure of a cooker wood, but we think if it can be looked at to save those jobs, it can go a long way in assisting those people. And this is an institution, I believe, that can go a long way in bringing innovation in terms of where we are going for the industrial revolution. In which revolution are we? Are we in the first, are we in the second, as South Africa? Where are we? I don't know. Where's the second? Now we want to jump to the fourth. Okay. Because the first industrial revolution took place in Britain some years back. So, no problem. Thanks, the Deputy Minister and the CPSI. Let's attend to the issues that have been raised so that we can do better. Let's move to briefing by DPSA on the second quarter performance. Deputy Minister.
Thank you, Chairperson. The Department of Public Service and Administration is also ready to present the second quarter annual performance report. I'm going to be handing over to the official, Ms. Gruga, Linda Gruga, to present on behalf of the DG who couldn't be with us this morning. Thank you.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. Madam Zulza, can you present?
Thank you, Chair. Morning, Honourable Members and Deputy Minister. Taking the cue from the other entities, I'll just move to the relevant slide. What I'm indicating in the slide number 3 is that the reports that we are presenting to the Portfolio Committee have been audited by our Internal Audit and Risk Management Directorate, where the program submits their evidence in support of what they say they have achieved. Internal audit further audits other internal controls in the department, including human resource management, financial management, and supply chain as part of their annual audit plans. We note also report with concern that the performance for the second quarter, we've seen a decline from the first quarter. However, what is worth noting is that in the first quarter, we actually had less targets than we did in the second quarter. However, we have ensured that through our internal processes of managing performance, we follow up on every quarter performance in terms of those targets that were not achieved. And as I go through the presentation, I'll just also give an updated status of where we are with the targets that were not achieved at the end of October. As indicated by the entities, program one is mainly around compliance matters, where we are indicating that we have complied mainly, mostly with the areas around finance, the non-performance information in terms of the submission of our APP quarter reports to all the control points, as well as indicating that we are on track with the risk management work as approved by the internal audit work, as approved by the audit committee of the department. The target that we were not able to achieve by the end of October relates to a report with on compliance with the BEE status level of the department or of the procurements that we make as a department. It is worth indicating that we have previously not had this target. It was a target that was introduced by the Auditor General with this APP, and we had therefore experienced some challenges in terms of collating and analyzing the data across all our supply chain processes. However, we have since the beginning of October, middle of October, achieved this target, and the report that was expected has since been developed and submitted to the CFO. We are also therefore also noting that to date the department has not procured any goods and services above 50 million, and as a result we still implementing the 80-20 preference point system with all the other supply chain related procurements. In terms of our program two, which is the program that deals with policy and research, all the seven targets were achieved. I think worth noting is the work that is being done around the public administration norm and standards. The work has gained traction and the department is consulting with the national and provincial departments in terms of bringing this work into implementation. And this work is also linked to the functioning of the Office of Standards, which is in the Public Administration Management Act. And related to that, a draft business case which will inform the establishment of the Office of Standards was also developed. We also are in the process of undertaking consultations in terms of the work around the Center of Government Departments on the proposed configuration of the Center of National Government, and that work is progressing. Some of the consultations that we've had have focused on issues around the fragmentation of mandates of the Center of Government Departments, so that would be your DPME, DPSA, Treasury, and COPDA, as well as looking at the resizing of departments as part of that the work that has been spoken about by the President. We are also working on the paper on the transformation and modernization of public administration, which aims to propose further reforms in the area of public administration. So the work notes that there has been a number of reforms that have been implemented in public administration post-1994, but that when we look at the development of public administration, there is further reforms that need to be introduced, and that work is aimed at putting out a white paper on to inform what those further reforms need to be. We continue to do work on the public service productivity management tool. The committee will recall that in the 4 or 5 years, one of the areas that was raised when the Auditor General presents his findings is that it's good and well to look at performance in terms of finance as well as non-performance information, but how are we actually measuring the productivity of the public service? Noting that we do have a PMDS system, but there was a sense that there needs to be a tool that measures deeper than the financial performance, non-financial performance, as well as performance against work plans. So this work has been introduced, or this tool in particular, to look at other areas that need to be measured to really get a sense of how productive an institution is. And work has been done. The tool has been approved, and the intention now is to roll out the tool across the public service. and the work has started with the departments that are noted here on the slide. Program 3 deals with the issues around human resource management as well as labor relations and conditions of service. And we are indicating here, which I think is a good progress across the public service, around what is the current status of the average vacancy rate in the public service. The target was to 10%, and we are indicating here that the average across all departments is 9.6, which is below the 10% targeted rate, and that the time it takes to fill posts has reduced significantly. And we are now sitting at 5 months as compared to 8 months during the previous financial year. And if we look back at the other years, it sometimes was more than 12 months and even 18 months, and in some instances 2 years. So there's been a steady but remarkable progress in the sense that the departments are taking less to fill vacancies than has been the case historically. We are also indicating the status with regards to the appointment of persons into developmental programs, which includes your learnerships, internships, and we are indicating here that in the past financial year 2017-18, as well as 2016, the cumulative number of individuals that have been appointed is 68,000. I need to mention that the report is, the monitoring is done quarterly. However, the reports on the annual recruitment figures are only produced at the end of the financial year. So hence here we are reflecting the numbers as at the end of March 2018. So the numbers recruited during this year will be presented in a report that will be generated in March next year. Work around the monitoring of disciplinary cases continues. We produce quarterly reports and also assist departments to speed up the resolution of disciplinary cases, including cases of misconduct. And what we are indicating here is that as at the end of June, there were 405 cases of misconduct from national departments, and 1,700 cases from provincial departments. And we are indicating there in the graph that of the provincial department cases, 41%, which is 702, have been resolved, and there's an outstanding number of 1,015, which constitutes 59% that has not yet been resolved. And we also give sense of where we are in terms of precautionary suspensions and the costs thereof. And what is indicated is that as at the end of the first quarter, the total cost of precautionary suspensions for national departments was close to 5 million at 4.8, and with 59 employees placed on precautionary suspension, and for provincial departments, the cost was around 31 million with 166 employees placed on precautionary suspension. The department has reported to the committee before that in 2013, the cabinet approved a pool of public servants who are already working in the area of labor relations, and that pool constitutes people that assist departments as initiators and chairpersons and the employer or employee representatives. And this was all done in an attempt to make sure that we move closer to achieving the 90 days that has been prescribed, where disciplinary related cases need to be finalized, and 60 days for suspension cases. The figures, of course, indicate that there's still a need to put more effort in assisting departments so that they are able to be within the time frames that has been prescribed. The work on the government employee housing scheme continues. We're not able to achieve the target as at the end of September. However, resources in terms of staff have been put into the scheme following losing some of the employees. Given that the scheme is not yet established as a component within DPSA and is therefore staffed by contract employees. So there's always a challenge of even though employees are within the contracts, if they find more permanent employment, they leave the scheme. So we constantly have to make sure that we provide the resources. We are, however, indicating that the work does continue. The challenge was just finalizing the report, which accounts for what was achieved during the second quarter. We are therefore also indicating that at the end of August, 575,000 employees have received, enrolled to receive the housing scheme allowance, and 346,000 of these employees who do not own houses have the portion of their housing allowance diverted and accumulated into a savings facility, which is managed by National Treasury, and that to date that facility has accumulated close to 6 billion rand, which is linked to the accumulated by employees in the individual linked savings facility. Work is being expected to be done by departments, conditions of service components, which are located in HR, but also through programs that exist in terms of employee health and wellness programs to assist those employees who are not able to get home loans because of their credit ratings. But also work also needs to be done, I think, in terms of encouraging public servants around the value of home ownership so that they are able to take up and use the allowance correctly in terms of making sure that they are able to purchase property. I'll go quickly through this one. This program is responsible for ICT-related policy work, and that we are currently in the process of developing a public service digitization framework. And that work is done with the information technology officers that are employed by all departments managing the ICT systems of departments. And we are also working on the draft public service cloud policy, also in consultation with GITO. The intention of the policy is to guide departments on what needs to be considered prior to procuring cloud services. And that we continue to monitor the expenditure of ICT-related products and services in the public service. The concern historically has been that government spends a lot of money on ICT procurement, but sometimes we don't see the value of those IT systems in translating into improved service delivery. Linked to this work, the department is also trying to look at how do we minimize the high expenditure but still get the value for money through using economies of scale. So the preliminary findings are that the increase in ICT expenditure can be attributed to upgrades of equipment and systems as well as the security software installations done by the DPSA. Just to also note that the DPSA also is responsible for ICT security policy, and from the work that we do in monitoring the security of ICT systems in government, departments are therefore encouraged to upgrade their security software. And as a result, this is one of the areas that has contributed to the increase in spending by 1 billion from 2016-17. We continue to also do work around the setting of norms and standards in the ICT space, and to date, the work that has happened in this regard is around the ICT value management, ICT security, as well as corporate governance of ICT, which is currently being measured by MPET, and the DPSA contributes to the development of the standards against which departments are monitored and assessed. I will just go quickly through this. In terms of the SDIP, what we have noted with concern in terms of the assessment that we are doing is that the compliance by national departments has declined, and provincial departments seem to be doing fairly well in terms of complying, although, of course, 83% is not as good as 100% compliance. The department continues to monitor this work. What we've started doing is to also deal with departments that are not complying, and in this regard, letters have been issued to departments to ensure that they comply. And we are hoping that this will also start improving the levels of compliance, because historically we would just monitor, do the reports, but we never really followed up with departments where they are not complying. We continue to do work around the Batupili standards, which is an outcome 12 MTSF project, which was introduced to make sure that Batupili standards stop being things that are posted on walls and recited by public servants, but translate into actual standards that the beneficiaries of services can use to hold departments accountable. So the standards will look at the Batupili principle and actually break it down in terms of, when we say value for money, what is value for money, so that the beneficiaries can be able to hold the departments that are providing services accountable, because there's a clear sense of what is it that they must be looking for when they receive services in line with the standards. The work on the public service charter continues, and the work is intended to culminate in the production of the report of what has been the progress so far on the implementation of the charter by departments as well as other social partners. As the committee would be aware, that the charter was signed between the labor and government, and therefore the implementation of the charter happens at the level of labor but also at the level of government departments. We continue to do work on the CDWs, in particular the framework, and the intention is to finalize the consultations towards the, so that we ensure that the framework is widely consulted before it is signed off by the Minister for Implementation. This work was delayed in, of developing a framework for the promotion and maintenance of service centers. We first did a situational analysis of all the TUSOM centers around the country as a way of getting an analysis that will then inform the actual development of the framework. So it is targeted that the framework will be developed and finalized by 2019. The Africa peer review mechanism, we did indicate in the first quarter presentation that this work has been put in abeyance, given that we are working towards general elections. And I think it was indicated in that report that generally countries do not undertake these reviews when they are preparing for elections. So the consultations will therefore commence after the elections next year. I've indicated earlier on, this is the one program where unfortunately all of the targets were not achieved. However, we are indicating here that the work is progressing. The last target where they were supposed to be workshops on the whistleblowing framework, the workshops have since been held, and we have scheduled the workshops on the guideline for peer support to happen in November. We are closely monitoring this to ensure that all these targets are achieved during the third quarter. quickly on our vacancy rate, we are sitting at 14%. It is important to note that although we have 40 vacancies, through our prioritization process, we have only prioritized to fill half of these vacancies. And to date, we've filled 11, and we've got 22 vacant posts for which we have funding that are still to be filled. And the breakdown is that 14 of these posts are at SMS level, and the rest are on levels 2 to 12. And in terms of females at management level, we're sitting at 40%, and the intention is to fill all the SMS posts with females as much as possible, which will edge us closer to the 50% rate of having women at SMS. And we are sitting at 2.5% in terms of persons living with disabilities within the department. I would like to hand over to the CFO just to give a quick overview of finances, as well as touch on the progress with regards to the findings that were raised by the AG as part of the annual report assessment audit.
Thanks, Honorable Chair, Honorable Deputy Minister, and Honorable Members. Good morning. Just quickly on slide number 23, it's the financial report for the second quarter of the DPSA. We have got about six programs, and the DPSA's budget, excluding entities, is 481 million. Out of that, in the second quarter, 186 million has been spent, which converts into 38.8% of the budget spent. And I think some of the issues that needs to be indicated in terms of the underspending would relate to basically program one, which is administration, which is sitting at 37.8%. That program we are underspending basically under the line item office accommodation. We are underspending by about 24 million, which is money that needs to be paid to the Department of Public Works. There's some discussions that we are still taking place between the two departments that we're still resolving. The target is that by December we would have resolved all the issues and therefore would then receive invoices and pay to the DPW. Those are just interdepartmental transactions. The other matter to note under the underspending would be Program 3, which is Public Service Employment and Condition of Services, which is sitting at 39%. There is an amount of 15 million that is budgeted under that program, which relates to Government Employee Housing Scheme, which at the moment there's low spending under that. So that is the budget that is basically affecting the program in terms of improving on the spending. The other part, last program, would be Service Delivery Support, which is sitting at 37%. There's underspending basically because there was one project, which was the generation of the second country report for EPRM, which was supposed to take place, was budgeted at 3 million. Project would then now be postponed to after the elections, so that is partly what is affecting the spending pattern on that under that program. When you look to the lower part, the bottom part of that table, it's just entities. The three entities that have already presented, we indicating their allocated budgets and what we have transferred to them. That's what we're reporting. So far, we've transferred 49%. Of the budget to the Center for Public Service Innovation, 49% again to National School of Government, as well as 50% to Public Service Commission. That then concludes the table. The allocated budget for the entire vote, which includes entities, is 950 million, of which 422 million has been spent. We go to slide number 24, the chairperson, honorable chair, that is the same information, but just we're splitting it into economy classification, composition of employees, sitting at 47% spent. Goods and services is sitting at 24.3%, and the reasons are the ones that I just indicated earlier on. Transfers and subsidies were online, as well as payment for capital assets. If we go to the next slide, Honorable Chair, slide 25, we're reporting on the compliance matters. The 30-day payment period, all our suppliers have been paid within 30 days for the first quarter and the second quarter. We do not currently have challenges. We don't have any disputed invoices as well. The unauthorized expenditure, there's no unauthorized expenditure that has been incurred in the first and second quarter. That also applies to fruitless and wasteful expenditure. There's no fruitless and wasteful expenditure that was incurred. In terms of irregular expenditure, in the first and the second quarter, there were no cases of irregular expenditure, but however, we are highlighting the 11 cases that had overlapped from the previous audit that the AG has audited in the previous financial year. Those are the cases that overlapped from that, but we don't have new cases in the first and the second quarter. These cases have then been referred by the DG for investigation. The last slide for myself, Honorable Chair, is slide number 26, where we're indicating the progress in terms of the findings that were reported by AG in the previous portfolio committee. We all, I think, we note that the department received an unqualified audit opinion from Auditor General, but we do have action plan to address the three findings that they have raised, and we indicating the progress in terms of the three findings. The first two relate to supply chain management processes. We have, in the first one, issued a circular to prevent and tighten our internal controls in terms of deviations from SCM policies. That was one finding. And in terms of the second one, we are currently reviewing our catering policy, which was not aligned to National Treasury's practice note 8, and we will be finalizing that policy revision by the end of this month. The last part finding was around approval that was not given for an employee for doing remunerative work outside the public service. We have currently received a representation from the employee, and the department will then conduct investigation. And out of that, we will report to the committee the outcomes of the investigation. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
I'm tempted to say this brings us to the end of the presentation. We have indicated slides below this one, just progress with regards to the BRRR recommendations. If I'm not out of line, maybe we can take comments from members if they have any in terms of the progress that we've provided in that regard. Wait for direction from
the side. Okay, thank you, TPSA. Honorable members, Honorable Kosa, Honorable Mtau, Honorable Van der Vaart, Honorable Nivot, Honorable Kosa.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thanks, TPSA, for the presentation. Chairperson, I will start by saying that each time when you receive reports that are not that much satisfactory, I used to ask a question, where was internal audit? But now I want to say I'm happy that when they opened in their report, they indicated that everything, all the reports have been audited by internal audit. That is thumbs up to me. And to further indicate that I'm also happy with program two for the achievement of the 7th target. I'm having a challenge here, Chairperson, with regard to disciplinary action, more especially what is happening in the provinces. I just maybe want to be clarified with regard to the capacity that is there with regard to people dealing with the disciplinary issues. I'm not going to dwell much with regard to the report, but I just want to become practical. I'm saying this because in most instances, those who are taken on disciplinary actions, if they appeal, they win. That's why I'm asking what capacity is there with regard to those that are dealing with the disciplinary action. And looking at in the report here, you could see that in the provinces we have got challenges with regard to dealing with those issues. The other issues that I wanted to talk to Chair is to also commend their engagements with the CDWs, because these are the people who have got a lot of information. I want to further request the department to look into these issues, because the CDWs in certain instances on the ground, they are overlooked and they are not more utilized to the best of what they are having. I'm saying they do have information, but if they can be utilized, we can have more information on them, because they have resources, they are on the ground, so we need to utilize them, Chairperson. I'm also happy, Chairperson, with regard to 30-day payments. I've been crying that we have got the emerging ones, service providers. If they are not being paid within that particular period, when do we expect them to perform in future? Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you. Honorable Mtao.
Thank you, Chair. This one may look a little complex, but it's actually simple when I go to the question that I really need answered. If you look on slide number 6 and you look on at the governance of public administration, you see that the department has put in 3 targets, achieved none, and used up 41% of the budget. Now, on slide number 21, they explain what was done, work done, and what work should be done, and something that is left. And then you look on slide 23, that's a summary of the other departments or sections that have been working. And all of them have spent some money, 37%, 44%, 39%, and then you get to the 41%. But these others have actually achieved their targets, and these have not achieved their targets. And then on slide 25, you make the point that for this quota, fruitless and wasteful expenditure, no fruitless and wasteful expenditure incurred in quota 2. Right. How do we explain that we have spent 41% of the budget and didn't achieve the targets and we haven't wasted money? How are we going to get those targets met with the remaining money unless we're going to go and get some money somewhere? Just explain that for me, please. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Van der Vaart.
Chair, thank you. Chair, on slide 14, it's about the misconduct cases, and we start off by saying the first quarter for 2018-19 fin year on the number of days taken to resolve disciplinary cases was submitted to the DG. Then we don't mention the days again, and we say so many cases per province and so many cases per national departments. I think it would be nice to know whether these figures are for those 3 months only, and it's not accumulative. So it would be new cases for April, May and June. And it would also be nice to know, if we say you put somebody on precautionary suspension, I mean, how long can you go on precautionary? Is it the issue of 90 days and you go back to your job and you carry on and a new case comes? Just to refresh us a bit on that. And then obviously one would like to know which departments and which provinces. But I'm a bit confused on April, May and June was the first quarter, if I'm correct, and so many cases, but we're not referring to the number of days specifically that was mentioned here in the first bulletin. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Gasha, you vote.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. On slide 11, the public service productivity management tool presented to 5 national departments, one in the province, or one province in one province. Now, my question is, you said the productivity management tool was launched. When was that? I don't see a date anywhere. And then what about the other departments, especially local governments, the municipalities? Will this productivity management tool or measurement tool, in terms of this mistake, be presented to other national departments as well? I also want you to correct me if I'm wrong. You said that 575,000 employees enrolled to receive the housing allowance, 346 does not own houses, but am I correct? Is my calculations correct, which means then that 228,576 are using their housing allowance? Okay, so am I correct in my assumption? Because it only says enrolled, it doesn't say anything about using. So I just want to make sure that my calculations are correct. So 346,000 do not have housing, and that money is then placed into the savings, which is the 5.9 billion, which is still a concern because this money is accumulating instead of the department assisting the people to get housing or to get their own houses. So what processes are in place to encourage the public servants to own their own houses? Because the number is very different. I mean, it's only 200,000 who have their own houses, if I'm correct in my calculations then. And then also just to add to what Honorable Corsa said with regard to the community development workers, that framework, I would like to see that document, and if we can be taken through that document, if you can send it to the committee members as well, please. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And those are the questions and comments. Can we get responses?
Thanks, Chair. I will answer all the others except the one on financial with regards to Program 6. I'll give that to the CFO. And I will also ask the DDG for Program 2, who is sitting behind me, to give the response with regards to the product productivity tool. The numbers for disciplinary cases is a cumulative one, because we draw these reports from PESAL. So PESAL will give the numbers as they accumulate over the period. So it's not numbers that are specific to the first quarter. And just to indicate that the reports are done a month after the end of the quarter, that is why we are referring to the first quarter reports, even though we've just completed the second quarter. So it is cumulative numbers. It's not numbers specifically for this quarter. Precautionary suspension. The time that is prescribed is that within 60 days of being placed on suspension, you should have already gone through the disciplinary process. What happens is that, obviously, as I'm sure the committee has been appraised before, it's not the case. You find that people have been on precautionary suspension for a year, 2 years, or 4 years. So I think it's linked to the overall challenge around the resolution of all disciplinary-related cases within the public service, that we are not making the 90 days as well as the 60 days. It's very difficult to say it's because of the lack of capacity in departments. I think that there is a number of challenges why we are not able to meet. One of the things is that, for example, as one member has indicated, that the case might be finalized, and in some instances within the prescribed time, but the employee will appeal. For example, employees on levels 1 to 12, if the outcome of the disciplinary process is that, for example, they should be dismissed or suspended, they can appeal to the executive authority. The executive authority might overturn, might say the employee must come back in the case of. But fortunately or unfortunately for SMS members, that they don't have that option to appeal. But I think there's a myriad of factors why we are not achieving the days. And maybe it would be better if the committee can, there can be a special session that the department can then come and present the details of what actually is happening in terms of departments. But I think it's also important to indicate that the responsibility for discipline management is that within a department is that of an accounting officer. And therefore the accountability for making sure that cases are resolved within the prescribed time and to deal with any capacity issues that are presenting that happening, the official in the department responsible for that in terms of the legislative frameworks is the accounting officer. But I think we can note the questions that have been raised, and as I'm recommending that, I think it would be useful to then dedicate a session to deal with, for the department as part of their analysis and support work, to give the committee what actually is being done and what are the real issues that we are dealing with. On the housing scheme, the member is correct that enrolled means, because the allowance, housing allowance is targeted for a specific cohort of public servants, so it's not all the levels that are getting. So registering, they register then, because also as part of the new the resolutions that were signed, what has been done now is that there has been a delinking of spouses in terms. So if I'm a public servant and I'm married to another public servant, only one of us were getting a housing allowance. With the new resolutions, the different spouses get the allowance separately. So the enrolling was for those public servants who either would have been wives or husbands to then enroll into the scheme. So it is correct to then say that the balance of the in terms of numbers, where we are indicating that the numbers of employees who do not own houses, they are entitled and they do receive it. It's just that it's not going into them getting the money, but it's going, because you only get to use the allowance if you are owning a house, have bought a house, or if you are renting and you can produce proof that you are renting. So you are given access to your allowance. So for those that do not have housing and are not renting would be the balance of the number that was mentioned of public servants. But even though they are entitled and they do get the allowance, but it's not going to them. It's going to a savings, the savings facility. The point around more work being done, I think, is noted. And it's something that we'll give back to the scheme in terms of the, because they do road shows as part of the work that they're doing, and they do run workshops with public servants that are benefiting from the scheme in terms of getting them to invest in property and to use their allowances to be able to procure property. So we'll take that back as a comment. As I indicated also earlier, that it is also the responsibility of departments internally, because the housing allowance matters are managed as part of the conditions of service of units and departments. So the scheme works quite closely with those HR practitioners in terms of the work that they do that and the messages that should be given to employees around all areas of the scheme, as well as the employee health and wellness programs as part of their financial management programs that they do around investing and utilization of funds that employees have. We've noted the request around the submission of the framework. Going back to the department, we will assess where the how far the work is and if it's at the point where it can be submitted to the committee, and they will advise the DG of the request of the committee. Thanks. If I can hand over to maybe Colette before on the productivity tool and then to the CFO.
Thanks, Honourable Member. In response to the question on the productivity instrument hasn't been launched. It has been piloted. There was a process to design it first, and the designing over the past 3 years have been in the different sectors and have been in different provinces. So there's vertical downwards in terms of the sector, because the sector must measure productivity in its sector, and it's horizontal in terms of the province for the Premier's office to be able to measure the productivity. At the end of the previous financial year, the Minister signed off the findings of the various sectors with their case studies. Now, an earlier input that was given is that we are working on the finalization of the Office of Standards, the operationalization of the Office of Standards. If you look at the Public Administration Management Act, it indicates that we have to have early warning systems to measure efficiency and effectiveness. The productivity measurement tool is a measure, by and large, of efficiencies. And by its very nature, productivity is dealing with historical data over a three-year period to come to a conclusion that a department is either productive or not productive, which is different from functionality, which basically measures in real time whether that particular department is effective or not. So for the departments that we had run workshops with, it's supporting them in testing the approved instrument for its efficacy in terms of their particular metrics, because the metrics differ according to the context of the different departments. There cannot be a one-size-fits-all for certain indicators in the different sectors. So once we have operationalized the Office of Standards, both the organizational productivity assessment tool as well as the organizational functionality tool will be the two tools that measure efficiency and effectiveness towards an early warning system. We're also in the process of trying to get it onto a digital system, because it doesn't make sense to have a measurement tool that is manual. So for departments to be able to upload the metrics, for us to be able to then make decisions in relation to the metrics and the graphs and the analysis that come to a central point. But everything with regards to productivity measurement it's factor data driven to be able to come to that particular conclusion for all the indicators. But in terms of its launch, it has not been launched. It has only been approved for purposes of piloting. I just want to also remind members that when we revised the public service regulations in 2016, what we included in section 29 is that the minister is supposed to determine such an instrument, but we have not put it out as a directive yet, because the findings of the implementation in the testing in the departments will tell us the state of readiness for implementation as a formal instrument for measure.
Thanks, Chair. There was one question that was asked by Honorable Tau around the non-achievement or zero achievement of performance target and governance program. I think what I basically agree with you that obviously if you didn't achieve a targets, I mean, what happened to the expenditure that relates to the program? But you're also quite right that we have indicated some sort of program progress in terms of what they did on slide number 21, because obviously to reach to your target, you need to start somewhere. So it's just that we can't actually indicate at the moment what percentage did they move until to be unable to reach the 100% of those three targets. But I think the other issue that we need to note is that not all the activities of branches are indicated in the APP. Obviously, in the department, we have what we call operational operational target or operational plan, where you've got your normal operations. But those normal operations obviously will be linked to the fact that you want to reach this target. And that target is the one that is reported in the APP. And obviously, I agree with you that in the APP, because this is a public document, one would look at it and say, but they achieved zero, because the operational activities are not reflected in the public document. And one may be tempted to say, this is a possible fruitless and wasteful expenditure. But I wouldn't actually define it as such, because there's activities. For example, under the CFO's office, I've got activities which are operational, like your capture of S&T, payment of internal claims and all those things, be it committees, which are not reflected basically in the APP. But those are the work that the staff and my colleagues do on a daily basis, and that is actually what we pay them to do. So obviously I would say that is the issue, but I agree with you that it's unacceptable that obviously a branch has got zero target achieved in a quota, which is what we understand, and we will convey the message going back and report in terms of what has happened subsequent to that. I wish we had a model which we may call it pay as you achieve, because then obviously whether you achieved or not, you still receive your salary, and that is actually the expenditure that is being reflected. That if we had that model, obviously maybe there would be zero achievement and zero salary paid. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, so you are inventing your models. Honorable Van der Voort.
Thank you for allowing me. The reason why I asked the question about the accumulative or not is whether we can be told how does these figures, because I mean it's 4.8 million rand for national, 59 employees on precautionary, and 30.7 million and 166 employees in the provinces. How does this compare with the previous quarter, or maybe the same quarter in the previous fin year? Because the problem is you have to, it's difficult with accumulative figures, because you cannot determine, I mean, it's easy to ask you 200 and whatever cases listed here, each one, how long has it been there? It's quite a task. The issue is, how does it compare? Because are we ever going to get, I don't think you'd ever get to a zero figure, but surely every quarter, is it growing? Is it getting better? Is the amounts more? What? And how long? Because
we must also be honest, Jay. If you have a very clever legal representation, you can stretch this out till doomsday. And it never ends. So, and I think in the past we have asked, I think just when I joined this committee, is that what are we doing to make sure these cases get solved and not being stretched out and out and people get paid for, you know, for being suspended? Comes even worth it. So what does the figures compare like to the previous quarter or maybe the same time the previous year?
You want to respond first and the Deputy Minister come after.
Chairman,
I see you pointing the Deputy Minister. I don't know whether...
to actually say that, Honourable Panavald, you're actually correct to say that we need to be worried about the number of people on suspensions and this the outstanding disciplinary cases, which is what we are worried about, which is the process that we're working on. There's a task team that has specifically been put together to look at the suspension across government and the disciplinary cases across government so that we can actually try and make sense out of it in terms of the amount of money that we're actually losing as government when people sitting at home when they're not doing government work, and also in terms of the disciplinary cases, what is being done about them, and also to understand the capacity that is available to deal with those cases. And this is why lately we are actually also appointing something like 200 experts to actually help us deal with those disciplinary matters. But what is important at the end of the day is for us to come up with a report that clearly informs us of the status quo. Because once you don't understand the status quo very clearly, you cannot be in the position to manage to make meaningful intervention. I hope it answers your question. Yes. And maybe as we close, Honourable Chairperson, I want to actually say that we have actually taken the graduate recruitment program as our flagship. We're looking into it. It connects to the President's Yes initiative that has actually made a call for 1 million jobs to be created for youth in South Africa, both in the public and private sector. As a government, we're actually taking that seriously. We're hoping that all government departments would manage to be in the position to participate in this program meaningfully, to the extent that we will be in the position to manage to reach targets in terms of the numbers that have actually been put forward. And we appreciate the fact that we have had an unqualified audit as a department, but we're looking forward to a clean audit. But at the same time, we want to put forward the idea that our budget is not like it's a budget that is enough, which the committee needs to start worrying about, so that together with the committee we can actually see as to how we can actually be in the position to increase the budget. We have actually also cautioned our finance department to say that maybe this is just after the fact, to say that we need to bring in some form of holistic consultation process when we conclude the next budget, so that we can be in the position to get a budget that is realistic. Because when you look at what we've got as a department now, it only goes to 481,000. Because the other money gets to the entities, Public Service Commission, CPSI, the National School of Government. And when you look at the portion that is actually left for the department, that is actually responsible for monitoring the entire government, it's not really enough. And I can see you. Yes, I can see you actually agreeing with me on our final vote, which means as we move forward, you're going to actually help us to look at how to manage to increase this budget to the extent that it can be in the position to assist us to manage to step up the processes within the department. Digitalization is also one of the priority areas.
We have lately been visited by the World Bank that has actually made an assessment as to what we've got. Recommendations have been given. We are hoping that we will be in the position to help energize this process of digitalizing government of South Africa. You are asking, Honorable Chairperson, where are we in terms of the fourth industrial revolution? But if we don't digitalize government, we're not going to actually manage to move with the global trends, and which is what we're actually trying to do as South Africa. At the end of the day, I think what is important is for us as public service to really be interested in looking and scanning across government as to what extent everybody in every government department is doing to assist us in dealing with the triple challenges of poverty, unemployment, and inequality, which is one major aspect of the transformation agenda of South Africa. We are putting a lot of effort into it. We are hoping that it will actually assist moving forward. But at the same time, it cannot actually work out properly if we don't manage to thoroughly deal with corruption. We have norms and standards. I hope they are actually going to be assisting, which the official colleague was actually talking about. But at the same time, earlier we talked about the fact that, you know, there's no country that has got beautiful legislative framework like South Africa. We have policies. And as you can hear, whoever is speaking, they're talking about frameworks that are there available for monitoring, for implementation. But we need to make those meaningful. And as earlier indicated, that we have a beautiful policy that's supposed to police procurement. But when you look at the area of suppliers database, that's where you find that then the game changes. You find that you have beautiful policy, but that policy still manages to come to a situation where government resources are actually wasted just because of the database, which we are hoping with time we will be in the position together with Treasury to manage to revise it. I don't know how, but it's a measure that there's some measures that needs to be put in place in that that regard. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. Oh, no. Okay, thank you very much. Honourable van der Waals.
If you're allowing the Deputy Minister now actually refer to globalisation on another discipline, which would refer me to slide 11, where we were talking about the fragmentation of mandates in the government as well as the resizing of departments. So that conversation is going on when we refer to what's going on around the world.
Honourable Deputy Minister.
Thanks for the input, Honourable van der Walt. There's nothing that is definite yet. It's a process that has been looked into. We're not saying it's looking into that direction to the extent that the conclusion might be the same.
Yeah.
But of course, yes. But of course,
when we talk about resizing, not increasing.
When you talk about a study needs to put together facts so that we can be in the position to come up with meaningful solutions out of the thing. Thank you.
Thank you. I think this matter of reconfiguration, obviously the president will take a decision at the end. There must be science behind it. It should not just be some sucking that we want 2 or 14 departments or 21. And conditions of each country are not the same with the conditions of another country. What you do, you use those other countries as case studies, but does not mean that you implant those conditions in another country raw as they are.
even when you do blood transfusion, you first do a lot of work, because the groups might not be the same, this blood might not be clean, and so I think let's, Deputy Minister, let's do a lot of science behind this, because there's going to be casualties also. If you reduce 10 ministers, and each minister and a deputy minister doesn't have 14 people around him or her. So it's not a simple subject, like you just sit here and say, let's cut, let's not cut. It has got all the pros and the cons, this matter. And okay. If the DA takes over, we have 15 departments. So I will appeal that those who are responsible for this function should do a lot of research and understand what we are dealing with and the country in which we are. There are certain things which are applicable in a first world like America, but there are certain things which are not applicable in a developing country like South Africa. So if you do comparison, you must look at each case on its own merit. You don't just go and take a Trump system and bring them here. They are not workable in a developing country. So a lot of work has to be done in this regard. And as we say, at the end is the president, because that is his competence to decide on the departments. The legal regime in South Africa, Honorable Van der Waal, makes things very difficult when you have to discipline a public servant. In the private sector, I think it's much even easier than in the public service. It's a very complicated system. You will want to do it much shorter. But the public servant also has a right to appeal. There's a recourse up to the labor court level. I know what I'm talking about in my previous experience. And you don't decide when will the labor court will put the matter on the roll, because that's another area of the arm of government, which is judicial. They just say, no, look at, they call you, you come, you appear, the advocate comes and says, no, I'm still looking for more information from government, so my client can't be prejudiced. And the judge says, go back, you will come back in February next year. So we might want to look at it on the side of the department to do certain things, but there's also the judicial part which runs its own course. And it's a matter that has to do with our legal system and the type of laws that we have passed as a parliament. We have got very sophisticated laws in South Africa. That's what I've realized. And sometimes they work to our disadvantage. And this is what we are living with. Deputy Minister, this issue of housing scheme, are you working closely with the human settlement? Because housing is a human settlement competence in the main. And I know human settlement has passed a policy, adopted a policy called breaking a new ground and all those. And they've got a number of products in this segment that we are talking about. Those who don't qualify to be in the low-cost housing, but they can't get a loan from government, and the number is increasing. What are you doing in that area? Because human settlement has got a lot of experience in this regard. Because if we talk of 5.9 billion, whether it's liquid or whatever, it's a lot of money that can be injected into the economy and create jobs
and have people to have decent accommodation, because there are so many people who stay in the backyards renting and so on and so on. So in that regard, I think collaboration between government institutions becomes very, very important. Maybe you can respond to that so that I have a clear clarity in that regard.
Thank you, Chairperson. As custodians of the pension monies of the government employees, our responsibility is to provide funding for housing and allowances for housing. The Human Settlement Department develops, they build the houses, we don't build the houses. And of course there are programs that actually tries to target the gap market in under human settlement, which is also what we are trying to do. What we do is to timelessly have meetings with human settlement so that we can be in the position to coordinate. But human settlement goes beyond people who are in government, because we will only go up to services for public servants. Outside that, that's where human settlement actually comes in. But we don't build houses. We just encourage public servants to have houses through the kind of programs that we put in place. And where housing has to be accessed, like you have to have an asset in the form of a property, we get concerned as to how you will actually manage to afford to have finances around it. Then you will then also come in terms of financing. And you see, when you buy a property, normally what happens is you've got to pay it off in the form of buying. Now, we look at that process, and this is why we will have establishments that will do financing like the banks are doing. And that's where South African Home Loan has actually managed to come in to provide home loans to public servants. When the house is there and they've got to buy it and they can't afford it, and the financing that needs to actually be made available, home loans, South African Home Loans will come in and buy that house for public servants in the form of a loan. Does it make it clear?
Yes, I've been in this sector before. And I understand what you are talking about. And so I will urge that the collaboration between the two departments is very critical in that regard, so that we unlock this money that is used as a saving. And in the era in which we are, where the economy is so down, 5.9 billion is a lot of money in the economy. So I think in that regard, if this matter can be looked at seriously, so the better.
Yes, I have not actually entered into how these programs are doing and the monitoring that we're doing. Maybe there could be a report in future on this matter.
Okay, then I will get the report from you. Thanks, honorable members, officials. I think we have almost come to an end. Are there announcements, Secretary? Okay, if there are no announcements, we are at item 8, where the meeting is officially adjourned. Bon voyage.
Oh, what's up with them for a while? Thank you.